Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is happening, everybody? Happy Victory Monday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You know, the two amazing people that we have with me today, the one and only Perry Goldstein. You can find her on Twitter at Perry underscore Goldstein. And of course, Wisco Grant himself. You can find him on Twitter, of course, at Wisco Grant. Perry Grant, it's Victory Monday. How the hell are you?
Great.
Better than not a Victory Monday. Now uneasy about another quarterback injury, but better than being uneasy about a quarterback injury and coming off a loss. So
very well said. I think that's very well said. And we will obviously get into all of that. We will break down this Packers victory. We will get into a plethora of Packers injuries in this game that are not super fun and could definitely limit Green Bay as we get and start looking ahead to Detroit next week. But that is for later. Right now, we have to start no other place than our Luigi's Pizza player of the game. So Perry Goldstein, I will start with you. Who is your Luigi's Pizza player of the game from this one?
Oh, wow. There's a few guys you could give this one to, actually. This was a very wonky, funky win, and it came from a number of very distinct plays. But I think I'll give it to Edge Cooper because I think his sack fumble was the turning. The vibes were very low, and then he came in with a big play. Devontae Wyatt picked up the ball and the Packers got to score and just like really take the lead. And that's when the swing for me, it felt like the Packers were going to take this one and just eke it out and come out of Jacksonville with a win somehow. So I think his momentum swinging play makes him my player of the game.
Grant, agree or disagree? Are you going with Edge Cooper? Or are you going somewhere else?
Well, that's what I was going to say. Because he also had that play running down the seam too, which, like, I don't know that he dislodged the ball, but just his presence there. And also, like, really impressive for a linebacker who started right next to the line of scrimmage to get back on that. So I was going to say Edge Cooper, but because Perry said that, I'll say Josh Jacobs just because I think his veteran presence amidst a quarterback change and what he said after the game, Andy and Perry, he's like, I almost took it upon myself. What did he say? I took it upon myself today to show that we can win running the football. And I think that attitude is like, I think that's important because I think the Detroit Lions can beat you just by pounding the ball into the ground. I think lots of good teams can do that. So even just not even talking about his success on the ground, and he took the rock a lot today, but just his veteran presence, which they talked about on the broadcast, and then his commentary after the game, I really like. So I'll talk, I will pick Josh Jacobs.
You made a face and I thought you were disagreeing with me, but it was because I stole yours.
I thought you were going to say either Josh Jacobs or Malik Willis. There's lots of good answers, but I like the very specific Edgerrin Cooper because of two plays that were huge in the course of the game. So I really liked your pick. Yeah.
We did not talk about this ahead of time of who our individual picks were. I also had Edgerrin Cooper on my list as number one. So as Zach Cruz perfectly broke down on Twitter, he had a run stop on third down that forced a punt, a tackle covering a kickoff, a run stop on a third and short, a strip sack setting up the takeaway touchdown, and then the pass breakup and third and long on Christian Kirk where he ran up the seam. Again, pass breakup-ish, either that, like you said, in the vicinity. It looked like maybe he got his hand in there. Tough to say on the replay, but either way, really impressive play from him. And a really impressive day from him. And I think he just continues to improve and show out more and more. I thought one of the interesting things was that you look at his snap count in this one, he was still only at 34 snaps in this game of like all the, what we just talked about and the impact that he made, 34 snaps. McDuffie was at 38. Eric Wilson was at 57. Quay obviously didn't even play in this one. And he was still a bit of a struggle at times, even to kind of get him on the field for some reason. So in 34 snaps, he made that much of an impact. Obviously he played a little bit more in special teams, which included that special teams tackle, but he is a star in the making from what he can do anytime he's on the field. Even in small sample sizes of a 34 snap game, he's still making plays at linebacker that we have not seen anyone make at linebacker since Nick Barnett. Like, I don't know. It has been a hot second. It is really, really fun to watch him play right now.
Yeah. I was going to add to, and the snap count is interesting because it definitely felt like he played more than he has, which I'm sure he did play more, but for Quay to go down and for all of the linebackers, not just Coop, but Eric Wilson as well, to kind of step up and fill the gap of your starting inside linebacker. I thought they played phenomenally. I mean, Eric Wilson is just a playmaker. He's everywhere. But Edge Cooper too, as a rookie who has really played like a very, very limited role, he makes the most of it when he's on the field.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. So we're gonna make the consensus that our Luigi's Pizza player of the game is Edrian Cooper, since Wisco Grant, you were in that same vicinity as well. So that'll be official. Of course, you can tweet at hashtag, or I should say hashtag Luigi's Victory Monday, for an opportunity to win a case of Luigi's frozen pizzas, which you're going to want to get entered for. Just make sure you're following at Luigi's Pizza, LuigesPizza as well, to get entered to win. All right. We are done with our Luigi's player of the game, Edrian Cooper, and I want to move on to our key takeaways from this game. So, Perry, I give you the first one. Grant, you get this one. What is your biggest takeaway from this game for Packers-Jaguars?
That a quarterback in Matt LaFleur's offense better be able to line up under center and be a little mobile. Because I think when Jordan Love had to be in the shotgun, it's not even that he needs to get out and run. Like, I don't think Matt LaFleur needs a running quarterback, but he needs a quarterback that can get under center to set up some of the things that really make them good. Like, I think he can play out a shotgun, and if he's hot and he's on the same page with his wide receivers and tight ends, like, I think he can operate out of the shotgun just fine. But when he lost that little bit of mobility and was in the shotgun, it, like, the offense just took such a step back. So I know there's a million different takeaways that we could have, but like when Malik Willis came in, I was like, well, might as well, because Jordan Love can't operate the offense the way that it needs to operate today. And if they would have punched two of those early scores in and it was 14-0 at the end of the first, then maybe it would have felt differently. But, you know, watching Jordan Love, especially after he took that bump that aggravated or made whatever worse, I'm like, this just isn't working. Like, I'm not a guy who even thinks Malik Willis is that awesome. I'm not someone who's clamoring to get Malik Willis into the game any chance he can, but I think for this offense to really hum, the quarterback got to be able to be under center, and Jordan Love had just gotten back to that and then lost it today. So that was my biggest takeaway of the game, at least offensively.
Perry?
That is a good one. It was just very clear that the offense had no rhythm, was not humming, and he was struggling. Not to say that it was necessarily doing that when Malik came in, but I think riding Josh Jacobs was kind of the key, and I kind of wish they had done that from the start. But my key takeaway is this team's just really resilient. I thought the first it was kind of a tale of two halves, but this was a game that they should have dominated and they didn't for a number of different factors. I think it's one that, as a fan, you look at this going in and you're like, well, Jaguars are very bad, and the Packers are much better than them on paper. Like, I would love to see them beat down on them and dominate and leave, you know, with a 2-3 score win. And when it was clear that that was not the game we were going to get because of injuries and, you know, the Jaguars showed up today, it very easily could have become like a very scary trap game loss. And this team just refuses to let that happen. And I think for anyone going up against the Packers, you should take note of that. Because you have to play to 0-0 against this team. Like, they will keep it going through four quarters. Like, the resiliency is there. And I think it's a huge reason why they're 6-2. Everyone steps up through all four quarters. So they're very hard to beat. Like, they're very hard to beat. They're not playing their best football through eight games, like, by any stretch of the imagination. And they're 6-2. So I think all of us sitting here think that they're going to get better as they get healthier and down the stretch of this season as things start to click, which, again, if you're going to face them down the stretch, is kind of scary because they're still finding ways to win even when they're really not playing that well.
I'm with you on that, Perry. I think the big takeaway is that they got the victory just when I don't really care about the style points as much. I think the offensive game is really, really interesting. I think the first thing I will say is that it was very clear to everyone, kind of like you said, that it not super in rhythm early. And I think Jordan's injury played a large part in that. In a game where they weren't really in rhythm at all early, in a game where they had a backup quarterback for the majority of the game, in a game where their red zone offense could basically not do anything, and their third down offense was abysmal, They scored 30 points. Like, this is like, it's almost incredible to an extent. I get two turnovers were a huge piece of that. They got 14 points off of two turnovers, one of which set you up inside, but like the 5-yard line. So no question about it. That was definitely a huge piece of that. And getting those points off of those turnovers was massive, but they put 422 yards up on this Jaguars defense as well. It wasn't just like this complete, like we're not talking about a day where they had 250 total yards of offense and needed a couple turnovers to get points. To me, the overall issue in this one was the key plays, the ones that we look at, the red zone offense, where they were 2 of 6 in the red zone, and the third down offense, where they were 3 of 11 on third down. And that to me was what was a big struggle and a disappointment in this game is, you know, those are going to be the key moments, the indicators as to whether or not you can put up the points that you want to put up. And I think that's where Green Bay really struggled overall in this game. They still found a way to win, which is promising. I think the overall disjointedness of the offense had a lot more to do with Jordan's injury and just not being 100%. Kind of what you were mentioning earlier, Grant, is like you obviously would have loved to have played him under center. But when I went back and I rewatched it, like offensively, even early, like even Jordan, when he, after like the initial groin injury in this game, where he comes down and Gimpy in the first one, he makes that ridiculous throw to Romeo Doubs along the sidelines. There's the deep throw that he makes, or like the somewhat like semi deep throw to Romeo Doubs that he makes. I'm like, there's still some throws that he is making that make you just go, oh my goodness. It's just ridiculous. Like, he looks fantastic, even in a game where he was clearly like 50% not himself and not totally in rhythm. I still saw enough there. The one play that I really, or the one thing that I just really, you know, was sort of frustrating that I couldn't kind of get over. I think if you take away that last touchdown drive by Jacksonville and this game ended 27-20 and Green Bay just like got a takeaway there, forced them 4 and out or whatever the case may be. I think if that drive stops, you can say, yeah, that felt like a good, solid victory. When the defense needed to get the stop, they got the stop. You know, the offense put up enough points, got up through the backup quarterback and did what they needed to do to win. I think that was the only frustrating thing, is when you absolutely had to have that stop, couldn't keep 7 off the board, and then made Green Bay with an offense or with a backup quarterback go down and try to get the field goal to win, which thankfully they did. Awesome play call on the Jaden Reed play, which we can talk about. But that was the only thing that I really had an issue with. I thought other than that, Jacksonville deserves some credit. Green Bay didn't have their A-plus game, but at the end of the day, still found a way to win.
Yeah, and like, Jacksonville is the worst team in the league in red zone defense.
Yeah, it's the weirdest.
This is a team that, like, you, when you get down there, it should be automatic. And it wasn't at all. And red zone offense has been a struggle up and down over the course of the season this year for the Packers offense. And like, I don't know, there's no like fancy analysis way to say, like, you can't win football games if you don't score touchdowns. And you can't win, like, you're not going to have decisive victories if you're not scoring against bad red zone defenses like the Jaguars.
These are always, just really quick, right? These are always like the scary things to me. Like, anytime I see a statistic like that going into the game, I'm just like, you know, Jacksonville's going to work red zone defense all week long. That's their 1A thing that they're going to do, because they suck at it so bad. And like, Green Bay, of course, is going to like think, yeah, and maybe not think, but like go into it, be like, all right, we've got these plays driven, you know, drawn up based on what we've seen from Jacksonville's defense so far. And I'm just like, you just know it's not going to remain this crappy forever, and they're going to work on it. And I always, like, anytime there's a stat like that, it always just gives me like the, oh, I just know they're going to work on this all week, and it's going to be more difficult for Green Bay than any other team has been. And that's exactly what we saw. Jacksonville's defense stiffened up. I will say, the play to Tucker Kraft in the red zone where they fake the run, he's the inside tight end. So many times you see like it's the outside tight end and they go upfield and like out, and the safety is able to identify it easy. The inside tight end to come and block the outside edge defender and then almost make it seem like he threw the tight end to the side, and then he goes backwards, and then everyone keeps coming up at the run play, and then Tucker Kraft's just wide open in the flat. That is a chef kiss Matt LaFleur special that I absolutely loved, but I just needed a tad bit more of that, because to your point, the red zone offense was not good enough. Grant, sorry, what were you gonna say?
Well, no, I was just going to add on the red zone scoring. That's why, you know, Josh Jacobs taking that one all the way to the house is such a significant play, right? When Josh Jacobs can bust one loose, or when you can hit Tucker Kraft one-on-one against DB or Christian Watson over the edge, like, a 40-yard offensive play is great, but a 45-yard touchdown is so crucial, just because, like, it's always great. Like, if Josh Jacobs would have been tackled at the 6, like, that's still an awesome play. That's still a great run. But then what if the Packers don't punch it in, right? Especially with a backup quarterback. So, like, I think that's part of the value of Josh Jacobs and maybe one of the many reasons, who really knows, right, the full thought process going from Aaron Jones to Josh Jacobs. But we want a guy that when they get a chance to bust one loose, they take it all the way to the end zone. Because if you don't, you just never know. You never know what's going to happen. You first and goal at the 6 and you get a 10-yard holding penalty. So to your point on red zone scoring, that's why it's really important to have a guy like Josh Jacobs who can take that one all the way to the end zone and score on it.
Yeah, explosives change absolutely everything. Let's get to the quarterbacks in this game more, you know, in specific, starting with Jordan Love and his groin injury and what this could sort of mean for the team moving forward. We'll go to Tom Pelissero here, who says on Twitter, quote, quarterback Jordan Love will undergo tests Monday, but there's optimism that he avoided a long-term injury today per sources. Love kept playing after tweaking his groin, but eventually had to come out. Status TBD for next Sunday's showdown against the Lions. So TBD against the Lions, not a long-term injury. At least that is the thought right now per Tom Pelissero. I don't know what to do with that. Grant, what do I do with that? Is this good news? Is this bad news? This is, like, obviously a groin can be a lingering issue. This is, you know, I'm wondering if, you know, by overcompensating maybe for the knee over the last couple of weeks, did that injure the groin? And now trying to come back from the groin, do you overcompensate for that? And it's like, it just feels like, do you have to sit him for a bit and get him healthy? You've got a massive NFC North opponent coming up against the Lions. So take it wherever you want. This is obviously troubling to some extent that Jordan Love is a second injury of the year.
Well, the timing and positioning is crummy with the Lions coming up, but they also have the bye around the corner. And this is when you can be really thankful that they banked these last two wins, because they easily could have lost to the Texans and they easily could have lost today. They shouldn't have, but it's the NFL. Like, that game easily could have gone the other way. I had Ryan Wood on, who, it's funny, Ryan's gotten kind of like a Jordan Love reputation on Packers Twitter, which is kind of funny. And I talked to him about that, but he pointed out before the Texans game, like, this is such a big game, because I think at the time, what, they were 4-3 or whatever they were. But his point was, like, you get this game for the first time in like a season and a half, you finally have some breathing room, right? Because last year they were kind of messing around 500. And as soon as they leveled up a little bit, then so the fact that they've won the last 2 weeks, and now have ascended and kind of reached cruising altitude. That's the phrase that I've been using. And at 6-2 is really important. I'm just glad that it's not like, hey, he needs like the rest of the year. He needs surgery, right? Because that was the one thought in the back of my mind after the win today. It's like, okay, but what if his season's over? So once we get that diagnosis, hopefully out of the way with, and maybe that Tom Pelissero report is the first step in kind of putting that possibility out of there. If he misses 2 or 3 weeks, like, I think it's fine. The problem is when he comes back, he kind of got to start all over again, which is crummy. Then he's got to shake more rust off. And I don't know. I know that's a lot of random Jordan Love thoughts, but that's kind of where I stand.
Yeah. Perry, what do you think?
I'm less doomsday about it, I guess. I mean, I feel like he was fighting to come back in the game, right? And he fought through it. And I'm with you, Andy, in that, like, groins can linger. Like, soft tissue injuries are different, and that there's, like, less of a finite timeline for return and recovery. So if it wasn't the Lions next week, I'd be like, take the next week, take the bye. The Packers can obviously win with Malik Willis. Like, just get Jordan, like, 100%. But it's the Lions of it all that is what makes me pause, because this game is for the division. It's at home. It's at Lambeau. And the Lions are, I think, at this point in the Packers season, like, their most important opponent. And who knows what, like, this game could mean at the end of the season. So all of those factors is like, and Grant already said it, like, this is crummy timing. This is just, like, really, really bad timing. If this was, like, an AFC opponent, it'd be like, you know what, rest it up for 2 weeks. This is perfect timing with the bye. But the Lions throw, like, a little bit of a wrinkle in it for me. I think it's just going to be a wait and see. You know, this week he could come out and be like, you know what, I've done some rehab and we've done some work on it. And, like, I'm just, you know, I feel really good and I can go on Sunday. It's like fully in the realm of possibilities. So, that's kind of where I'm just, like, hoping this goes, but we've had injury luck already with him. And I don't know how much more injury luck, like, there is in the bank at this point.
There any? Oh, go ahead, Grant.
Well, I was just going to say, it sucks also that this is the Lions game at Lambeau, because you already lost the Vikings home game, and it's not impossible to go to Ford Field and US Bank and win, but now if you want to avoid getting swept by those opponents, you might put yourself in a position to need to go on the road against the two toughest rivals, you know, in your division. So that sucks, not just the opponent, but also it's your best chance to get them at Lambeau next Sunday.
100%. And like the Lions are coming off a win, like a decisive win today.
That was the Lions had the win today that I wanted the Packers to have.
Exactly. Like putting up 52 against a bad team, and like, you know, they're steamrolling themselves into Lambeau Field. They know, like, they're going to get up for this game. Like, they know what this game means for them in the standings and the North and et cetera, et cetera. So you wish you had your quarterback at 100.
Hello, friends. We are quickly approaching the halfway point of the regular season already, which seems absolutely absurd to say. But despite time flying by fast, there's still plenty of season left, which means there's plenty of Prize Picks winning to be done. Now, with Prize Picks, you can make your selections in less than 60 seconds and turn your sports opinions into real money all season long. And right now, when you sign up on Prize Picks, you get $50 instantly when you play $5. You don't even need to win to receive the bonus. It's guaranteed. Now, of course, Prize Picks is the best place to get real money sports action, and you can join over 10 million users who are already signed up. In week 9, I'm going with Amon-Ra St. Brown against Green Bay. Yes, I know we don't want him to do well, but he seemingly always does well against Green Bay. And I'm also going with Christian Watson against Detroit. Finally, I'm looking at Patrick Mahomes to have a huge game against Tampa on Monday Night Football. Now, there are plenty of options to choose from, but just remember, whoever you choose, you can download the Prize Picks app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly when you play $5. That's code PACKADAY on Prize Picks to get $50 instantly when you play $5. Prize Picks. Run your game. What's going on, everybody? I am so insanely happy that football is back. And as excited as I am right now, I can't even begin to tell you how excited I am to be back at Lambeau Field. And this year, I'm going to be taking my oldest son to his first ever regular season game, and that moment is going to mean so much to me. Thankfully, as I search for tickets to the game, Game Time has a brand new feature called Game Time Picks that makes getting tickets to see your favorite teams play live even easier. I'm actually scrolling through Game Time right now as we speak, and there are two tickets exactly in the section where I want, and it's currently listed as one of their amazing deals. Section 137, two tickets, and it's just so insanely easy to navigate and find amazing seats at the best prices, plus have the exact view of the seats you're purchasing. I can see them right now. And my absolute favorite part, Game Time has the lowest price guarantee. You'll get the lowest price to the game, or Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference. So take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code PACKADAY for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code PACKADAY, P-A-C-K-A-D-A-Y, for $20 off. Download Game Time today. What time is it? Game Time. To the point earlier, you know, Grant, for like the cruising altitude, yes, at 6-2, it feels good. In the NFC North, it means almost nothing. You know, I mean, it's good that you're still in that conversation at the top there, but with the Vikings and Lions, specifically the Lions playing that the way they are right now, you know, 6-2, you feel really good. You know, even if you lose to the Lions next week, whatever happens, like if that were to happen, you still feel really good about your opportunities to get into the playoffs the remainder of the year. I don't think that's necessarily the concern right now, but if you don't want to have to go on the road for three road games just to get to the Super Bowl, like you've got to find a way to win the North. I'm not even talking about a bye. I'm just talking to avoiding three consecutive road games, which is, you know, obviously a really tough road to a Super Bowl. I know they did it in 2010, but those are usually the exceptions to the rule. Doesn't happen very often. You got to find a way to win the division. And this is a massive game. And to your point, you lose this game, you're 0-2 in the division, and your two games were against the two top teams in the division, and both of them at home. So that, I think, is the sucky part, as you mentioned. I will say this. I don't think this decision with Jordan Love, whether there is one or not, comes down anything to the bye being in 2 weeks or the Lions playing this week. Like, this will be a medical decision one way or the other. Like, they're going to make this in the best decision for Jordan, both now and in the future. And they're not going to let that, I think, cloud their judgment in any way. This is a long-term investment into Jordan and in the Packers overall. So I don't think you rush him back for this game, especially with the way Malik Willis has played so far. But you would absolutely love for Jordan Love to be able to play. And then even the question above and beyond that, let's say he does play, right? What percentage are we getting? Are we getting no under center Jordan Love? Are we getting pistol formation, shotgun only Jordan Love? Which again, it's not bad. I would probably still take that over Malik Willis, but it definitely changes the calculus for the game plan and how you attack Detroit. And you know, they'll come after him too and try to get as many hits on them as they can. And it just changes the entire game plan for both teams. So it's going to be a major talking point and decision, or like just factor in the game this Sunday. All right, let's go to, go ahead, Perry. What were you going to say?
No, we can keep going. It's okay.
Let's go to Malik Willis, because I think that's the next logical progression here. First of all, what a freaking story that Malik Willis is at this point. I wish there were a few more AFC South teams that he could play against. You know, it's unfortunate that we've run out. Can we bring the Houston Oilers back in some way? Like, he has just absolutely torn them apart on his AFC South revenge tour. But it is so cool that, like, this is different than the first two in the fact that you're coming in as the backup, game plan is not set for you, and you've got to go in and deliver. And I know that first drive was like primarily run the ball, run the ball, run the ball. And they really did a great job surrounding him again with good plays and setting him up for success. But overall, like, you've got to still deliver. I thought an underrated, really key play in this game was the third down. And so the Jaguars had just taken the lead, a 4-point Jacksonville lead. Jordan Love is out. Malik Willis is now in, and he probably knows at this point he's going to be in there the remainder of the game. And it's a third and four, right around there, on their own 35-yard line. And you don't convert this play, and you're at risk of punting it right back with Jacksonville having all the momentum and just like the life feeling just kind of sucked out of you at the moment. And he stands in the pocket and waits for Dontavian Wicks to get in and out of his break and gives him enough time to get open and just delivers a nice, easy 5-yard completion. But I can't tell you how many backup quarterbacks I've seen where that first initial like hitch isn't there. And it's like, oh my God, panic. And especially when you're a mobile quarterback, that initial instinct is to like run around in circles and do everything you can or take off running. And maybe he's good enough that maybe he could have made that play anyway with his legs. It's certainly within the realm of possibility. We saw it, but just the poise in the pocket to not panic at all, let the offensive line around him do their jobs and wait till Wicks gets open and deliver a nice, easy 5-yard throw. It doesn't look like anything in the box score, but that to me was such a huge play. The next play, he gets the big 20, or like either that player, like two plays later, it's the big 20-yard run. And then it's the 35-yard Jacobs, 38-yard, whatever it was, Jacobs run the play after that. And it just changed the entirety of the game. He has been so clutch in three games so far. I cannot say enough about him. What an awesome story.
Well, and I don't even want to say his worst play, but the one play that sticks in my mind that he'd probably like to have back and that I'd like for him to have back is a ball that he threw perfectly. He just threw it too hard, like, probably. And Romeo Doubs would still probably tell you that like, I should have caught that anyways. Like,
I would tell you Romeo Doubs should have caught that anyway. Like, I don't, yes. If he could have thrown it, like there could have been a smoke trail off the ball. And as the wide receiver, you got to find a way to catch that pass. So I'm not a believer in the throw it too hard category. You throw that ball hard, you let your receivers do the work.
So I would tend to agree. I just want to, you know, extend yeah. a little grace. Like, yeah, that's, he zipped it, but to the point, right? Like, if that's the worst thing that he did today, it's really, really impressive. And I second all the points that you made, Andy, especially coming in cold, right? It's one thing to have the whole week to prepare, but that it's not, and he came in and like, it's not like they were up 14 points and all he had to do was hold the lead. Like, that did not feel like a game that they were winning. I didn't think that they were going to win at that point. And for him to come in that scenario, I don't want to start power ranking like the most impressive Malik Willis moments of the season, but that's gotta be right up there. Right. I think that's a higher degree of difficulty the last two times that he came in.
The fact that we need to, the fact that we actually could power rank the most impressive Malik Willis moments of the season is a story in and of itself at this point. But Perry, your thoughts on Willis?
Yeah, you guys covered a lot of it. I think the biggest one, right, is that like he was not prepared to play in this game, and yet he still came in and delivered in a really tough spot. What came to mind, you know, because we're in baseball season. So in baseball terms, like, he got the save. Pretty much like he came in and he got the save in this game. And I think it's just really, really impressive for a guy who was pretty much given up on by his former team. He's had like an astronomical amount of development. I mean, you talk, Andy, about like hanging in the pocket and not taking off. And there's been obviously some level of like coaching those tendencies out of him. So like kudos to Tom Clements, but you know, Goot made a trade right before the season started, and it's equaled 3 wins for this team. Obviously Malik has had to come in and execute on it, but I also want to add, right, that like without him, I don't know if the Packers win these 3 games with the backup quarterback situation that they had before he came in. So, and Grant shaking his head like hard no. So, I mean, it's huge on him for execution and huge on, you know, the guys around him to step up and Matt LaFleur to call plays that, you know, work for him, et cetera. But just like the fact that he's even in the building period has equaled 3 wins.
What a massive trade from Goody, a 7th round pick. By the way, they traded away their best quarterback. Like if you've seen the Tennessee Titans play at all, Mason Rudolph's gotten opportunities. Will Levis has had plenty of opportunities. Like Tennessee literally traded their best quarterback for a 7th round pick. I don't think Green Bay wins those 3 games with Mason Rudolph. I don't think they win those 3 games with Will Levis. Like they got Malik Willis. They got the best one. And it's an unbelievable, like, it's an unbelievable story. It's almost unfathomable that Green Bay could do that and bring him in and have him be that successful. It's a real testament to the pro personnel department for like locating talent and figuring out where they can find guys that they can bring in and can help the team. And then it's a great testament to Matt and the entire offense for plugging them in and figuring out ways to utilize them to the best of, you know, to the scenarios that fit best for those particular players. And can we talk about, well, we'll jump into kind of the remainder of this offense here. Can we talk about the fact that the play to Jaden Reed was not even in the game plan for the week or wasn't even in the playbook for the week? Like it, Matt, if, for those of you who missed Matt LaFleur's press conference. So he said like they had thought about putting that particular play in the playbook earlier in the week, but then decided against it ultimately. And then I forget which coach it was. Do you remember, Perry or Grant, which coach they said it was?
Yeah, it was Vrabel.
It was Vrabel. Thank you. Yes, it was Vrabel who, you know, went to Matt and said he identified something that their defense was doing when they rotated down that they thought they could completely take advantage of and utilize that play to get a big chunk. The play before that, they run the same play. So it's a can call at the line. So it's either a run or if you see the right, if you see that rotation that they're looking for, they can it and they can go with the play to Jaden Reed. So they called the can play the play before. They don't get the rotation that they were hoping for. They didn't do the thing that they saw on tape that they thought they could use, you know, utilize it to. So they don't can it. They hand the ball off. It gets a few yards. They come back the next play, call the exact same thing. Can be a handoff or a can. Willis sees the rotation come down. They can it. They execute a play that wasn't even in the playbook for that week, even in the game plan. They, you know, showed it to everyone on the sideline, got Malik Willis ready to run it, gave him the can call to figure it out of like what the defense could potentially do, and then get in that situation. It's the perfect freaking play call in that situation. You get a wide open Jaden Reed. And I'll just say this too. I understand that this looks like an easy pitch and catch for Malik Willis. We saw Lamar Jackson on the day miss a wide open Zay Flowers. Like sometimes the more wide open the receiver it is, the harder, because you just want to like guide it and not screw it up, or you get too excited and you overthrow it. And just to see that throw and to place it perfectly and to come up in that, again, scenario with a completely clutch play, just everyone, that's Matt, that's Vrabel, that's the offense, that's Willis, that's Reed, that's everyone executing it. And it's just a really, really fun thing to see. And that's why you win games. And that's why the Packers are 6-2 and not 2-6.
Well, and I'm glad that you mentioned Reed too. I think the throw is more impressive than the catch, but he's watching that ball come down over his shoulder, also thinking about trying to get upfield. And I don't think Jaden Reed has been bad the last couple weeks, but I think he's a little bit, some drops and, you know, like specifically the one before halftime last week, it's like, oh, there's three points or a great shot at 3 points, you know, before halftime. So, and maybe that's a weird silver lining. Like Andy, you talked about a scenario in which the defense just gets the stop and the game ends and that final drive and kick never happened. Maybe, you know, maybe in the long run, it's better because Jaden Reed got to see one go through the hoop kind of after kind of another, I would bet for him, frustrating game. So maybe that's something nice that they can carry into the week too. That's a nice confidence booster for a player who had his version of in a rut, which is still a pretty fine player, but he's left some plays out there and I bet that felt good for him.
And I think you overcome adversity too. Like Jacksonville did just go down, score the game time touchdown. You gave up 10 points. Like Jacksonville's all fired up. The momentum's on their side, whatever we believe about momentum, whether it's real or not. And just to go out and execute and figure out a way to get immediately down the field to the point where Jacksonville's trying to let you score at the end so that they can just get the ball back. that's a clutch performance from everyone involved, and you take that. So yeah, I think there's, you know, the adversity that they overcame in this game, still what they were able to do, totally agreed. I just still kind of wish the defense would have got that stop. Any other thought? Oh, go ahead, Perry. You were good? All right, sorry, I thought you were going to say something. All right, just a couple other quick thoughts on the offense before we transition to the defense and kind of break down that a little bit more. Thought Tucker Kraft, again, coming up with some big plays. The stiff arm play where he's just, you know, getting the corner off of him for a good like 50 yards down the field. Obviously, we talked about the touchdown earlier. He continues to be impressive. And then I just thought Chris Brooks continues to be impressive as well. Huge blitz pickup in this game. Solid running the football. Really smart to get down and not score the touchdown at the end of the game and not even get close, because I've seen running backs in the past get to the 1 yard line and then the other team literally like drags him across to get him into the end zone. I just thought stopping at the 4 yard line, 3 yard line, whatever it was really, really heads up. And he just continues to be another player that Green Bay finds just out there, ready to pick up on the practice squad, elevate him to the roster, and he just comes in and performs. It's just, that's what Green Bay does. It's really crazy that they can continue to do that. All right.
I was going to mention Chris Brooks also, just especially, I mean, they talked about it a ton, right, after the game, which is like, for someone who like could have had their very first NFL touchdown and to have the wherewithal to not get that personal milestone because you know it's going to mean a team win, it just says a lot about the person that he is and just like the way this locker room is built and, you know, the mindset of this team. So I hope they get him a touchdown in the coming few weeks, because there's a little bit of an IOU now there from the team.
Very much so. Go ahead.
That little play by Chris Brooks, it's so funny because our biggest complaint about this team, I think for the most part this year, is penalties and, you know, self-inflicted wounds and mistakes. But in back-to-back weeks, like, you got to have it one final drive of the game. Everything needs to be executed. You know, clock management, positioning on the field, Chris Brooks not going in. And they've looked just nails the last two weeks. And it's football's a weird game. And like those drives show a ton of maturity and focus and prep and all the things. But then there's just so much other crap in the first couple quarters that it's just the opposite. So it is a weird wrinkle of this team that when it's mattered most the last 2 weeks, they've been completely nails. And that's a great time.
And I'll just double down on what Grant said earlier at the onset of Josh Jacobs, 25-127, two touchdowns, and was just on one, like was just absolutely on one. Like he got in that rhythm in the second half where he just wasn't going to be stopped. And like, there was the plays where he's like, you could tell it like should have been like a 2 yard loss. He's like, no, I'm just going to make this into an 8 yard gain. Don't worry about it. And like, what he did in this game was massively impressive. And again, I there was the article earlier this week, Josh Jacobs not living up to expectations in Green Bay. Just rip that thing right up and be done with that thing, because Josh Jacobs has been really good for Green Bay. And this was his best game, in my opinion, so far. Speaking of guys who they picked up who continue to be massively impressive, Xavier McKinney comes up with another interception, just a vacuum for the football. Anytime it's near him, he's going to suck it up and find a way to get it in his arms, which is really impressive what he's been able to do through the course of the year so far. Pressure. It actually, on rewatch, there were definitely some plays that got home, but again, the ball just got out. I still think we're wanting a little bit more from this defensive front, especially later in the game when the team's trying to just stop them from scoring a touchdown and you know they're going to throw. Still couldn't get that pressure when you needed it to. Adrian Cooper, we talked about. Javon Bullard, a little bit of a tough game. So, Per, I'll let you start. Any overarching thoughts from the defense in this one?
Again, like, tale of two halves. Like, this team or this defense kept this offense in the game for so, so long. And like, if you don't play complimentary football, eventually the other team is gonna get there, right? Like, they're gonna score points. And I feel like it's really hard to judge based off that final drive that we've been talking about, right? Cause that's so brutal to watch them like allow happen. But at the same time, for most of the game, like, they held the Jaguars to 10 points and, you know, what more do you want? I agree about the pressure. I actually all day, Andy, have been wanting to ask you, in your rewatch, like, was losing Evan Williams that much of a, like, just confusion for the back end of the defense? Like, because I felt like they were just giving up way too many easy completions to the Jaguars, like too many chunk plays, a few too many explosives, and just really uncharacteristic of them also. And the boundary corner play in this game was just subpar, in my opinion. And I don't know if that's like losing one. I mean, Evan Williams has been literally one of the best safeties in the league so far this season. So I can understand losing a player of that caliber can really affect you, infect your communication especially when you have to move guys around, but I haven't rewatched. So I want to know what you saw when you did.
At first glance, and just on the rewatch, I mean, like, obviously we haven't watched all 22 or anything. My answer would be yes. And it's not just because Evan Williams was out, but I think it's the domino effect. And I've talked about Javon Buller. I think he's a really fun player. I think he had a tough game in this one, but yeah. And he's going to still be a really good player. I really truly believe that. But he's a little bit more of a risk reward guy. We saw that on the one play where he jumped the route and got beat on the double move. And I just thought, like, you don't have quite the same, I don't like caliber might still be the right word, but like, just like Evan Williams also can put the word safe in safety, where he kind of takes care of everything on the back end, tackles really well, doesn't gamble, is a great ball hawk. And you just, Javon Bullard is a little bit more of a wild card at that spot. And we saw that, I think, in this game. So I think going from Evan Williams to Javon Bullard at safety was a little bit of a downgrade. Keyshawn then having to move inside, and then you have more Eric Stokes on the outside, which I think is also, not probably ideal, especially in this game. So I think it was more the domino effect of everything that happened out of it. I think maybe if you could have kept Javon in the slot and Keyshawn on the outside and had another, satisfactory save, which I'm not saying Green Bay should have four safeties just at the go and ready or whatever, but like, if they could have just replaced Evan Williams with a solid safety and kept everything else as is, it probably would have been fine. But I think it was everything that kind of went along with it. And then again, I think just on top of it, Javon having a tough day, and the fact that Javon has been practicing primarily in the slot, like, that's what he's been playing. So now you have to go back to playing safety, and probably didn't prepare for that as much through the course of the week, and that could have played a factor. I think all those things kind of go into it. So my long answer is yes, I think it absolutely played a part. Do I think it should have played that big of a part? No, I think Green Bay still had the pieces that they needed to be successful, but we definitely saw a downgrade once Evan Williams went out.
It's so interesting to me, because I felt that way on the watch also. And I think the domino effect is probably the right way to put it, right? Because it's not just like, oh, you lose a piece and like, look, they're playing poorly. It's more like the moving around, the people having to play quote unquote out of position, not necessarily out of position, but potentially more snaps, especially than we've been seeing, like, from guys like Stokes and Valentine. And I guess now, like, there's their answer of like why they've been not having as many snaps as we thought that they would at the start of the season. I just, again, like, the culmination of it to me was the touchdown to Evan Engram, triple coverage. You have arguably your three best defenders on him in Jair, McKinney, and Nixon, and somehow he comes down with that touchdown, and just like supremely unacceptable. I Hafley's been really aggressive in a good way, in my opinion, and he got kind of soft on some of these like gotta have it drives. And that was also confusing to me. Like, if I was in the, in the room and he was at the podium, I would ask him like thought process on not clamping down. Cause we've seen him do it, and we saw him do it in this game. Like, they had tons of three and outs against the Jaguars. And yet in the big moments where you needed to get a stop, they went kind of soft, and the Jaguars were able to like pick apart the zone. So very confusing, like, choices in terms of like timing in the game.
Yeah. I think there was a little bit of unluckiness / happenstance, and I have to go back and watch a little bit closer, but there's like the one play where Keyshawn's going to come off the edge, and my guess is he was going to try to time it up better and like wait until they, and then like at the very last second go up, but he kind of got caught in no man's land and then like came to blitz, but could, like, by that time it was like screwed. And then this is my initial interpretation of it without seeing it on all 22, I might not know 1,000,000% for sure, but it certainly looked like Stokes is supposed to go back on that play, and he stays up for kind of like the fake bubble screen on the outside, and you end up with a big play right behind him. That was just a little bit, I think, unlucky, and then a poor execution, what looked like to be Eric Stokes at first glance, but don't 1,000,000% quote me on that. And then, I think the play in like triple coverage, I think, it looks triple coverage-y, but McKinney can't quite range over there in time. It's still a great throw and a great play by Evan Engram. Nixon's trailing on the play, and then Engram just goes up and jump balls it. And then I think Jair sort of misplayed it, thinking he's going to get a pick where he needs to go and attack the ball. And then also has like the injury where he comes up lame. Like, I don't know if he couldn't leap off the foot or he went to leap off of it and he hurt it or whatever the heck happened. But I think it was, it was a great ball, a great catch. And I think it was just, again, a weird play by Jair. I don't know what happened there, but I think if Jair maybe goes up and contests that a little bit better, we might see it a little bit differently, but the injury may have played a part there. I don't know. There was definitely some things where I saw Hafley try some different things. And it like, there's the play too where they, I think, are showing blitz. And then you've got the linebackers ranging back. And then I think it was Ingram like goes up the seam, and then Lawrence just hits an unbelievable throw on like kind of like a back shoulder ish right to the tight end before Evan Ingram could get there. Like there's just some things that they were trying to do. And I to an extent, I think part unlucky, part poor execution, and part some really big time throws from Trevor Lawrence and some good plays by especially Evan Ingram. But either way, I think they probably needed to do some things a little bit different and maybe just even be a little bit more aggressive and just say, yeah, I know they were trying to maybe show some unique looks and get there, but like, you know what, just do that double A gap and, you know, just bring six on some of those plays and just make him get it out of his hands. But at the same time, maybe they didn't feel as comfortable without Evan Williams back there and with Eric Stokes as one of the corners, like all of that plays into it. And I don't know, it's tough to say, but it clearly wasn't good enough at the end of the game. Hey everyone, this episode is brought to you by Manscaped, the global leader in men's lifestyle and grooming. Every man knows the unbeatable feeling of a fresh barbershop shave. Now, what if I told you that you no longer have to wait weeks or even months between appointments to experience it? Introducing Manscaped's newest innovation, the Chairman Pro Electric Foil Shaver, the game-changing tool that brings the luxury of a professional shave right into your home. Now, whether you're after that daily silky smooth finish, or if you prefer to maintain a rugged 5 o'clock shadow, the Chairman Pro Electric Foil Shaver is your go-to for precision and style every time. So head over to manscaped.com and join over 11 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by using code PACKADAY for 20% off plus free shipping. I still remember going through high school and college with a crappy razor and showing up to class with toilet paper stuck to my face and trying to stop. It was an absolute nightmare. It was not a good scene. I only wish I had a Chairman Pro when I was younger. And here's the thing. The Chairman Pro isn't just for daily shaves either. It's powerful enough to tackle up to a 5-day growth, making it perfect whether you're shaving every day or just tidying up after a few days. And with up to 75 minutes of runtime on a single charge, you can take your time getting the perfect shave. So you can get the Chairman Pro today and experience a shave that is as smooth as you deserve. So get 20% off and free shipping with code PACKADAY at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with a code PACKADAY at manscaped.com.
Pressure was lacking a little bit too. Like if there's a little bit more pressure, maybe none of those plays ever get that far, and we're not talking about them. Just to talk about the defensive front, because you guys hit the back end so well. I love this front so much. They just have countless guys to rotate in, and they all do different things. And I think the problem, if you want to call it a problem, is they don't have one or two absolute game destroying, game wrecking players. And I think if this defense specifically is going to be this championship level Super Bowl winning defense, the best version of themselves, they kind of need Rashawn Gary to be a superstar or Kenny Clark to have a stretch where he plays like a superstar. Like they just have a lot of really good defenders, and it's really fun to watch them all because they all do different things, but they need one guy to kind of, at least in my mind's eye, lead the way. And they don't have that guy right now. And I think that's kind of putting a ceiling on exactly how good that defensive front can be.
Yep. I totally agree. There was a couple plays where Rashawn Gary had a pressure where, again, Lawrence got it out just in the nick of time. Preston Smith had a pressure where Lawrence got it out just in the nick of time. There were definitely some frustrating ones. Like I said, I thought the pressure was a little bit better on rewatch, but close is fine, whatever, but it's not good enough. Like you still got to figure out a way to make those impactful plays. And that's, if this were one game too, like if their pressure has been awesome all year and you'd be like, yeah, they were just this close on a few of them though. Like you'd be like, oh, okay. Like not a big deal, but it's been the same way all year where it's been close and they just can't get home.
Well, and that's the thing. I'll be really quick, Perry, because I want you to talk about the front too. That's the thing. It's like, it feels like we do this every week, most weeks. Some weeks they just get hot as a pass rush, but a lot of weeks it's like, man, where are the edge rushers? Where's Rashawn Gary? And then I go on Twitter Monday afternoon and like the all 22 breakdowns are out and everyone's like, he actually did a lot more than we thought at first. It's like, okay, well, that's great. But normally the pressure is in the hurries. Like those are predictive stats that are ultimately somewhere that's going to take us somewhere, like that luck, that wheel is going to turn at some point. And it just kind of feels like it's the same every week. We're on Monday, we're explaining it. And I don't know. It's just a little bit of a frustrating cycle, I guess.
Yep.
I'm looking forward to seeing what Wyatt does now that he's back. Like he was like leading the team right in sacks before he went out. And like, in this game, like he already had a splash play and he worked for that ball too. Like that was not like, oh, look, here it is. He was like, get hip check, get out of my way. Ball is mine. So I think to your point, Grant, I completely agree that somebody has to become like the guy. I think it's obviously not going to be Preston. I unfortunately think that we are past that with him. He is solid. LVN has not shown that he is that guy, or could be that guy yet. We know Rashawn can be. Like, we know he has it in him, but again, to your point, like, it's just not showing up on the stat sheet for whatever reason. I think Wyatt can be, at least from like a sack and pressure perspective. So I'm excited that he's back. Very happy that he's back. You could see 95 like really moving some guys. I think pressure, not to get too far ahead because I know we're still talking about this game, but I cannot help but think about how much we're going to be talking about like pass rush and blitzing when it comes to playing the Lions. Like, Jared Goff has been unbelievable when pressured and blitzed this season. So again, not to get into it too much, we don't have to like look too far ahead, but I think it's going to be a really, really, really interesting game plan from Jeff Hafley and seeing like what he does and how he uses the guys up front to get after Goff, who's been like nails this season.
Well, and they have good tackles, right? Like, they have excellent offensive linemen. So a couple previous weeks, like the Eagles and the Vikings, when Darisaw was healthy, there wasn't a ton of pressure, and we came away from those games thinking, well, those are great linemen. So you can explain that away a little bit, and that's going to be the case with the Lions too. So it should, I don't even want to call it a litmus test. It's a huge challenge for a pass rush that's struggled to show up, I think, a lot when they've had opportunities, and they've had good games too. So it's not like they've been really bad, but I think it's just going to need to be a little bit more if they really, really want to be, you know, this 10 out of 10 championship level defense.
Yeah.
PFF's early charting of this game had Green Bay with 9 pressures in this game, 3 for Rashawn Gary, 1 for Preston, 1 for Wyatt, 1 for Brooks, 1 for Enagbare, 1 for LVN, and 1 for Edgerrin Cooper. So 9 total pressures on 36 rushing opportunities. So basically getting a pressure on 1 out of every 4 snaps. So not ideal. Not probably what you want. Not brutal, but still only the 1 sack, which is by Edgerrin Cooper, and 9 total pressures on the day, which for, you know, it's 1 out of every 4, but you've usually got like 4 guys at least rushing on every play, right? So you've got, what, 36 pass rush opportunities times 4 players usually rushing. So what, 130, I don't know. Math is hard. But yeah, either way, it's not a great percentage. Fun times. 154? Right? I don't know.
He's not gonna be able to move on until we do this. Let's just get that.
People don't come here for the math, Andy. It's fine.
36 times 4, 144. All right, carry the 1, remainder 7, and we're back. This is all we needed. All right, really quick, special teams gave me exactly what I wanted, a mostly forgettable day. That punt by the Jaguars punter was unbelievable. One of the best punts I've ever seen. A 77-yard piss missile right out at the 1-yard line. Like, that's unbelievable, but No mistakes from this special teams, a game-winning field goal. McManus made all of his kicks. Just a very forgettable performance. We don't even need to talk about it. It's a beautiful thing. It's a very beautiful thing. Let's talk about the injuries just a little bit more. Because why not? You obviously had Jordan Love, which we talked about, but Evan Williams, we talked about him. He goes out. He does not return with a hamstring injury. Josh Jacobs goes out towards the end. It sounds like Jacobs was trying to say he could continue, but Matt LaFleur wanted to get him checked out and everything. It seems like that one might be okay. We don't know the status of Jair, who had that foot injury or whatever it was at the end, and there was no more defensive plays. So we don't know if he could have returned or not. And then the other one that I will note is Eric Stokes got replaced by Carrington Valentine on that final drive. It looked like early in the drive, as I was doing the rewatch, like he was maybe holding his hand is what I kind of felt like. And then did not return to the game after that. So we may have an Eric Stokes injury as well. I don't want to say that for certain. It seems weird that mid final drive, the Packers would just be like, yo, Carrington, go take his place. Maybe, but it felt like he was maybe holding his hand, and then he leaves and doesn't come back. So a lot of injuries to monitor as we get ready for Detroit. Eric Stokes, Jair Alexander, Josh Jacobs, Jordan Love, and Evan Williams. And obviously Love's going to be the one we're watching. We think Jacobs is going to be okay, but you could have a secondary that if things don't go right, you could be without Evan Williams, Jair Alexander, and Eric Stokes, which would be a massive issue for the secondary as you get ready for a Lions offense that is certainly, you know, clicking on all cylinders. Thoughts on that, Grant?
Well, they were so healthy coming into this week. So it's always my first instinct to, you know, like, feel pity, but like they were just about as healthy as they could be on Friday. But Ballantyne was the only one who didn't practice, right? So it's not like they were already banged up coming in. You just hope that maybe one or two of those guys, it was just a tiny little thing at the end of a long game, and they'll be back next week. But I'm still choosing to be optimistic as possible. Yeah, with injuries, fingers crossed, exactly.
Fingers crossed. And obviously Jordan Love is the big one. All right, really quick before we get out of here, NFC North remains crazy. One of the crazier endings to a Chicago Bears game that you could ever possibly imagine. Amazing as Packer fans. You first of all have the offensive line fumble that they handed off to an offensive lineman on the goal line. He fumbles it away. You think that's going to do it, but Chicago is able to get the ball back. Their defense holds Washington. They get it back. Chicago drives all the way down the field, gets the Roschon Johnson touchdown. It's in the bag. There's what, like 20 seconds left at that point. Washington gets into range where they can do a Hail Mary. It, like, for some reason, Jaden Daniels, like, it looked like he could have stepped up maybe 10, 15 more yards to make sure that he was going to get that thing into the end zone. Doesn't. And then underthrows it, goes before the end zone, but it gets tipped up. And Noah Brown is just sitting there in the back of the end zone. Just ho-hum. I'll just wait for this thing to come down. And he catches the game-winning touchdown. Just an absolutely beautiful ending. Bears get the loss. We talked about it. The Lions looked like an absolute juggernaut going right through the Tennessee Titans. And then we had, of course, the Minnesota Vikings lose against the Rams on Thursday Night Football. So a rare 2-2 .500 week for the NFC North, where it seems like all they do is win no matter what. But thoughts on the NFC North, Perry?
Oh my gosh, the Bears game was crazy. Like, I, first of all, of course they lose on a Hail Mary because it had to be the Bears.
Yep.
I mean, Jaden, this is not about the NFC North, but I just adore Jaden Daniels. I love watching him play football. It's been so fun. They really touted the whole like number one pick versus number two pick thing in this game. And, you know, once again, the Bears picked wrong, I guess, or at least it looks like that so far. Sorry. I very rarely get very rivalry, but here we are. As far as the North, I mean, look, it's still neck and neck. Like, this thing can go a number of different ways still. I said it before. I think things are starting to level out to where you think that they're going to be, right, with the Packers and the Lions fighting it out for the division and the Bears and the Vikings, like, finding themselves somewhere in the middle. Everyone looks better than expected, especially those, the two latter that I just mentioned. The Lions are the team to beat, but I mean, I don't think that's too crazy of me to say. They look like the best team in the division right now. But the NFC North, despite the 2-2 record, Andy, still the best division in football right now.
Big time. Big time. I mean, first of all, losing the Rams loss was definitely an upset. That's one I think Minnesota is definitely going to want to have back. Losing to Washington on the road in that game is not a awful loss by any means. And it took a Hail Mary at the end. Granted, Washington outplayed them in that game, but even still, that's not an awful loss. NFC North remains king right now. And yeah, it's going to remain a dogfight for this division. And even Chicago, even if they level off, they're still going to be a pain for everyone to play. They play a lot of playoff teams remaining, and they're going to have a huge say in how this NFC North, or just the NFC in general, kind of plays out. The teams that can beat the Bears are going to be in a much better spot, and the teams that lose to Chicago are going to be fighting it out, but they're going to be a pain to play no matter what. And I think Minnesota will bounce back after their two losses. Their injuries continue to pile up. Christian Darrisaw is a massive loss for them. And obviously we saw a lot of injuries in the division this week. So Jordan Love's injury going to play a huge factor in all of this as well. Grant, any final thoughts on the NFC North? Nope, you're muted.
The Bears loss is funny. I have some friends who are, one of my best buddies is a Bears fan. I'm like, that, I almost feel bad. The offensive line fumble is funny because, like, everyone says the Bears still suck. And if I was a Bears fan, like, that would drive me up a wall. Like, how people just blatantly, constantly disrespect you, even if your GM makes good moves and even if Caleb Williams looks solid. But, like, it's plays like that. Like, that's why. Like, that, you're not beating the allegations when you put an offensive lineman in and then he fumbles. And then, like, the video of Tyrique Stevenson taunting in the end zone. Like, just a really, really entertaining game and pretty gratifying if you're a Packer fan too. Like, that's multiple kicks between the legs for Bears fans from that one.
Very, very gratifying. Bears fan friend texted me after and said, quote, "I think I liked it better when they were awful and I didn't have any expectations." So that's amazing. Absolutely love it. All right. Last thing before we get out of here. I want to talk Packers line just very briefly, but I will say there's definitely a lot of things people can probably go back and play that I got wrong in the offseason. One thing I did say, I said short the Jets. I said short them any way that you can. I'm like, there's way too much dysfunction there. It's not going to go well. Jets lose to New England. They've got the Texans on Thursday Night Football. They are a loss away from like literally having to be sellers at the deadline. And I don't know what that entails, but like they're dead. Like they are dead. It's just over. It's done with. There's no run the table here. There's just not. They are an awful, awful, awful team. That's the one thing I got right. And I'm going to brag about it because I may have got everything else wrong. So Jets really, really bad. And they continue to be bad. And they were even worse today, losing to the New England Patriots. Really quick thoughts before we get out. Packers, Lions. Grant, I'll start with you. Thoughts on that game?
The Lions do everything well, and they have all the confidence in the world, and they don't mess around, and they will embarrass you physically if you let them. Like, they are as complete of a team, I think, as the NFC has right now, and they have all the mojo. And I'm kind of waiting for the game where maybe the other shoe starts to drop with the Lions. Like, they got to have a stinker at some point. Even if they go 15-2, they got to have a stinker at some point. So maybe that's early on this week. That's what I'm going to start to talk myself into. But the Lions are terrifying for a million different reasons.
Perry?
Yeah, this is my game that I will watch on the edge of my seat with a stomach ache, probably, unless the Packers pull a Thanksgiving, which I don't see happening. The Lions are very good. They're a very, very good football team, and it's going to be a huge test. And I know that there are fans who are like, I wish for the days when the Packers just beat up on everybody in the division. That was so fun. I actually really love the fact that they have, you know, legit competition to sharpen them and keep them on their toes. I know it means maybe more losses and a tougher, you know, schedule and all of that. But something about these two teams going at it and like kind of the old school of it all, I really enjoy. So I'm just hoping for, you know, not 52-14. I'd say that in jest. I don't think that will happen. It's going to be like, it has the makings for like game of the season, to be honest with you. Just like the star power and again, the rivalry, the storyline for the division, because whoever wins is the one that ends up on top, all of it. It's going to be a good one, but only if the Packers win.
20 seconds. You mentioned the rivalry. This could also be a game where this rivalry takes a step up, because I don't know that either one of these two teams were on each other's radars last year. Like the Thursday night game early on in the season, I don't know that there was much there. And then Thanksgiving, the Packers got them and they didn't have to play again. So I'm wondering if now year two of these teams kind of having some really, I don't know. Let's see. Because
I'm not sure I agree with that. I'm not sure I agree. Well, it's always been a little brother, big brother thing, right? But I do think that like there is some, you know, Aaron Rodgers and Matt Stafford have always kind of gone at it at, you know, with each other. There's a lot of respect there. The Packers have always had the Lions number. But I think the rivalry, to your point, really was created last year in a more like hatred type of way that exists between Packers Bears. Like there's true hatred now between these two teams. Bring hatred back to football. And sorry, that was another baseball reference. because I think they're now the history of the little brother, big brother, and you know, now it's our time Lions mindset.
It's like the graph, the two lines of the two teams like intersecting finally, mm-hmm. like they're finally kind of on the same wavelength. And I don't know, Packers Texans is far from a rivalry, but those two teams wanted to fight instantly last Sunday. And I'm interested to see if we see some of the same kind of things when the Lions come to Lambeau.
And they're both two like super historic franchises, right? Like they've been around for forever. They've played each other for forever. So, I think there's going to be a lot of jarring and it could get chippy.
I'm ready for it. No matter what, I am ready for it. I cannot wait. It's going to be a really fun game. I don't care if Malik Willis is at quarterback. They're going to be without Aiden Hutchinson and Jameson Williams. Like it's going to be a very good game no matter what. And all I know is this, the AI is 8-0 and they've got the Packers beating the Lions. That's all I need to know. And you know what? Somebody is going to figure out this Ben Johnson offense eventually. And no better tandem than Jeff Hafley and, you know, maybe a former Jets head coach giving some ideas on how to stop it as well in Robert Saleh this week. So I know he's just working on the offensive side, but, you know, maybe just a couple of tips and tricks along the way couldn't hurt anything either. So I am massively looking forward to Packers Lions. It should be a very fun game. And the final game before the bye week, and then we get a week off, and then the final stretch of the season, which feels crazy to say already. Perry, where can we find all of your incredible work and any final thoughts you want to get out before we get out of here?
Just follow me on Twitter. Follow the podcast at Packs, which she said. We're actually going to have a very special guest on for our Lions preview show. This guest is a friendly and familiar face that Packers fans should love and be happy to see. So everyone tune in.
I think we might be having that same guest on Packaday later this week. So that could very well be the case. Also, speaking of special guests, the one and only Perry Goldstein will be making a very special appearance on the Packaday radio show this Thursday, if I remember correctly. Make sure you're checking out that on thefanmilwaukee.com as well. Grant, how about you, buddy? Where can we find all of your incredible work and your amazing mustache?
Well, not this guest. I feel like as a producer as well, I feel like I've missed the boat on something. So I got to get to work booking a Bill show. But my nightly evening drive radio show is 4 to 6 on a handful of stations. And if you follow me on Twitter, at Wisco Grant is my handle. The link is there and you can search the show. It's the Wisco Sports Show, Facebook, YouTube, wherever you get your stuff, you'll be able to find it. So Twitter is a good place to start.
Make sure to check it out. It is always awesome. Always love talking ball with Grant. And of course, Perry Goldstein as well, which I get extra time with this week on the radio show. So looking forward to that. You can find me, of course, at Andy Herman NFL, at Perry _ Goldstein, at Wisco Grant, at Packaday Podcast. That's going to do it for us today. Enjoy your victory Monday, everyone. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.